gets tuned to yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's golden age. I'm Mark Lipponier. Coming up in this hour, horror, later on from The Mysterious Traveler from 1948. But right now, it's The Witch's Tale from June 26, 1933, a syndicated recording called The House of the Bridegroom.
We bring you The Witch's Tale, written and produced by Alonzo Dean Cole. Now let us join old Nancy, the Witch of Salem, and Satan, her wise black cat.
Hannah, I'm 22 year old I be today. Yes, sir, Hannah and 22 year old. Tain't many folks gets to a ripe old age like that, Satan. Satan, you took the words right out of my mouth. The reason for old Nancy living so long is 'cause she's such a nice, helpful body, always doing kind things for folks, like spinning pleasant little yarns to cheer 'em up. Don't you ever believe that old saying that the good dies young? And speaking of dying, reminds me that we got a real pretty little bedtime story to tell right now. Course there's a murder in it, Satan. And afore we finish, no telling how many people meet nice, terrible death. Douse out them lights. Sitting quiet in the dark is the way to hear our cheerful tales. Now draw up to the fire and gaze into the embers while we take you across the sea to merry England. Land of ghosts and haunted castles. Gaze into the embers deep while we spin the yarn about the house of the bridegroom. The house of the bridegroom.
And this room here, pardon me while I open the door, Mrs. Sheridan. This room was old Dr. Drummond's laboratory.
Arnold, if it weren't for the dust, one would think he had just stepped out of it.
That's certainly the effect it gives. It's difficult to believe, Mr. Fife, but this house has been unoccupied for almost 50 years.
This particular chamber, Mr. Sheridan, has been unused for nearly 100. Victor Drummond, the builder of Bridegroom's House, died in 1836. One of the provisions of his strange will was that the furnishings, particularly the articles within this laboratory, should be disturbed as little as possible and never be removed.
Look at the queer old books that line the walls, Arnold. My husband is quite an amateur collector, Mr. Fife, and these quaint bindings...
Well, the bindings aren't so interesting as some of the titles. Look at these, dear. The Brahmin Tantra, the Grimoire, Kabbalah, all works on magic. I say, Mr. Fife, could the old doctor combine witchcraft with his scientific investigation?
The works upon these shelves would certainly make it appear so. Matter of fact, I'm only acquainted with his history in a very general way.
And now that we've seen the entire house, Mr. Fife, do you mind telling us just what you do know of its history and of his?
Of course, your partner, Mr. Burton, has told us the place is haunted by the old doctor's ghost. But, well, we'd like to know the real facts of the case.
Burton's a superstitious fool. There's no such thing as a haunted house.
Of course not. If there were, it would never be Arthur's fortune to inherit it, Arnold.
Finding Bridegroom's House so cheerful-looking has been a great disappointment to Mrs. Sheridan, I fear.
A frightful disappointment. We haven't any really first-class haunted houses in America. And so when we learned of the legends concerning my inheritance here in London, I was fearfully excited. But now, when we find a place so perfectly charming...
Yeah, you must remember, it's still broad daylight, dear.
Oh, that's right. And no self-respecting pook would dare rattle his chains until the witching hour of midnight.
I fear you'll live here a long time before a supernatural agency makes its appearance at any hour. But if you wish to hear the history of the place, let's go back to the drawing room, where the air is a little better.
Yes, you open the windows back there. This room has been closed so long, it's acquired the odor of a tomb.
By his choice of comparison, you see, my husband is as anxious as I to capture the ghostly atmosphere, Mr. Fife. Oh, but you're holding the door. Excuse me. Oh!
What is it? What's the matter?
As I crossed this threshold, I had the queerest sensation. as though I'd stepped on a charged wire.
You've stood here?
Yes. I felt a definite shock. A tingling sort of.
Jove. If I stand here, I feel it too.
I'm directly beside you, and I feel nothing, sir.
Well, I don't feel it either now. It's gone.
Well, I rather think you and Mrs. Sheridan permitting your imaginations to play you tricks.
But since we both felt...
Well, Mr. Fife must be right, dear. There's obviously nothing here to cause such an electric shock.
As a matter of fact, there's no electricity in the house. It's only provided with old-fashioned gas for lighting.
Hmm.
Here, I'll close this door.
Arnold, doesn't it seem warmer to you in this dark hallway than in that sunlit laboratory?
Yes. Possibly chilly back there. I wonder what...
Oh, you two young people are certainly falling under the spell of this old place. But don't. I assure you there's nothing abnormal about it in any way.
Oh, there couldn't be. It's too perfectly delightful.
Well, Victor Drummond meant it to be delightful. He prepared this mansion to receive his intended bride.
Mr. Burton told us about that. And how just a week before the wedding, she ran away with another man.
That's the story. From the moment he received word of her elopement, he never left his house.
She broke his heart.
Evidently. Yet he could have felt no bitterness toward her at the last, for at his death he willed her this property.
Well, Mr. Burton said
I can imagine what he told you. The romantic yarn that Drummond left to the place out of revenge. That he put a curse on it. Oh, stuff and nonsense. Here's the drawing room.
What is your version of the old man's strange will and the events that followed it?
The only logical version. The will provided that his former fiancée should inherit his entire property on condition that she occupy the house he had built for her. That's understandable in a romantic old fool who lived as a refuse for 10 years because she jilted him. On her death, the place was to pass in succession through her female heirs, which is the reason you now find it your property, Mrs. Sheridan. The lady in question was your great-great-aunt. And let me tell you, tracing the relationship was quite a bit of work.
Well, she was an ancestress I'd never even heard of until I received your letter in New York.
Well, this curse you mentioned, Mr. Fife. According to your partner, it seems to have worked out.
Yes, Mr. Burton said my great-aunt and all her family died here.
Oh, people die in houses everywhere. Because of the manner of these particular deaths, the ignorant promptly ascribed them to supernatural agents.
Well, just how did the deaths occur?
Well, when the lady in question notified of her inheritance, she came here to live with her husband.
The man for whom she left Dr. Trump?
Yes, that little girl. 2 weeks after they'd settled in the house, both child and husband were found strangled to death by burglars.
Oh.
Burglars?
Yes, that's the natural explanation. The fools insisted a ghost had done the killing.
My great-aunt committed suicide shortly afterwards.
Yes. Hanged herself in a room upstairs. She left a note to the effect that Drummond, who had been in his grave 2 years, was responsible for her death, and that of her husband and baby. She warned others to beware of bridegroom's house. For the poor woman was demented by reason of her losses, of course.
Naturally.
Oh, but Mr. Burton said that everyone who attempted to live in his house afterwards...
My dear Mrs. Sheridan, you know what happens when you give a dog a bad name. Those who came here to live came here prepared for trouble, and they naturally found that for which they were looking. If you believe the stories that are told, a dozen men and women have met violent death here. Gruesome phantoms stalk through rooms at night, and ghostly laughter is heard. Fortunately, you are intelligent people, so you'll pay such silly tales the scant attention they deserve. Now you have the whole impossible history. The place is yours, Mr. Sheridan, providing you live in it. You may do as you see fit.
I imagine we live in it, Arnold.
Rather. After traveling 3,000 miles to acquire it.
Good. Now, unless you wish to look over the place further, I'll return you to your hotel in my car.
Oh, thank you. We've seen enough today.
Yes, and our next visit will be at night. So we can look for gruesome phantoms stalking through the rooms and hear that ghostly laughter we've been threatened with.
Yes.
It'll be a long time before you see or hear either one, young man. By Jove, it's growing dusk now. Well, let's be going. Oh, wait. There's a key somewhere. Oh, I remember. I laid them down in the laboratory. Now, if you'll excuse me...
Well, I'll get them for you.
Oh, no, thanks for that. I know exactly where I left them. I shan't be but a bone.
Oh, Arnold. Aren't you simply mad about this beautiful place?
Hmm. We never dreamed we'd own a mansion like this, did we?
And in England. In the heart of London. We'd always wanted to come abroad, never could afford it. And now...
Yeah. Now we can begin our second honeymoon.
That's silly. We've never even finished our first.
That's right. We never shall. But I wish I could have provided the money for all this.
Are you still bothering your head because it was left to me? Besides, it's really yours. This place is called the House of the Bridegroom.
House of the Bridegroom. But of a bridegroom who never had a bride. Poor old chap, that Drummond. How unhappy he must have been.
Yes. Arnold, you don't think there can be any truth in those superstitious tales?
Well, there couldn't possibly
be. Oh, I know it's silly to give them the slightest consideration, but despite my laughing at them before, Mr. Fife, I've had the strangest feeling since we've been in this house. A feeling that we're being watched.
Watched?
Yes, particularly in that laboratory. How do you explain the peculiar chill in that room? And the strange tingling sensation we both experienced there?
Well, Mr. Fife's explanation is the only possible one. Imagination.
I suppose so. But I've met practical men like Mr. Fife before. He's a sort who never believes a thing exists until he actually sees or feels it.
Don't!
Oh, Arnold!
Mr. Fife!
What's happened to him?
He went back to that laboratory. Hey, you stay here. I'm going back to that laboratory.
Oh, no, I'm coming with you.
Fife! What's the matter, man?
He doesn't answer.
Here's the door.
It's closed.
I'll soon open it.
Fife! He's lying on the floor. Arnold, look at his throat. Those big blue marks.
The man's been strangled. Good God, I think he's dead.
Oh, he couldn't be. Well, there's no one in this house to hurt him. No one here but Jim and you and me. Oh, that laugh.
Where's it coming from?
There it is again. It's in this room.
Why, it can't be. There's nothing to be seen.
Oh, but it is. And it's coming closer.
Out that door, dear. Out that door. Run.
Oh, the door is closed.
It's slammed shut. I can't open it.
Out of this door! Let us out of this door! Hummer and 15-year-old I be today. Yes, sir. Hummer and 15-year-old. That's right, Satan. If these folks will just douse out them lights, we'll tell them the finish of that yarn about the young couple from America who inherited a haunted house in England. They say a fella named Dr. Drummond put a curse on the place because the woman he built it for ran away with another man. Well, our young American couple didn't put much faith in haunted houses till they found a man a lying dead there. Then they heard an awful laugh and a door slam shut upon them. Draw up to the fire and gaze into the embers while we spin the rest of our yarn about the house of the bridegroom. The house of the bridegroom.
But then, as suddenly as it had closed, Inspector, the door was opened by an unseen hand, and we were free to leave the room.
I had fainted by that time. Oh, I can still hear that frightful laugh ringing in my ears.
I took my wife in my arms and ran with her from the house.
The laughter had ceased by that time?
Yes, as we reached the outer door. Then my cries for help attracted the passing constable, and but you know the rest, sir.
I merely know that a man's dead body was found in the room of which you speak, and that you are the last to see him alive.
You certainly don't think that we killed him.
No, madam. Both you and your husband are small people. Sufficient strength was exerted upon Mr. Fife's throat so that he was not only strangled, but his neck broken as well. Together, you couldn't have done that.
Then why are you taking us back to that awful house? And at night?
A murder has been committed. You and your husband ascribe it to a supernatural agency, which we of the London police do not recognize. I wish you to reenact the events before and after the crime so that we may possibly find the real killer. There's the house driver just ahead.
Why, sir, I know the old house of the bridegroom, sir.
Inspector, you think a man was concealed in the place without our knowledge? That it was a man who murdered Mr. Fife?
Naturally. And he took advantage of the mansion's ghostly reputation to play upon your fears with that laughter, and so arranged for his escape without danger of detection.
But how?
He must have been concealed in that laboratory. I'll find out where and how if I have to tear the place apart.
Well, here we are, sir.
Let me help you, Mr. Sheridan.
I don't want to go in that awful house again.
There, dear. Don't be afraid. Come on.
All right.
Shall I wait, sir?
No, drive back to Scotland Yard. I'll call for a car when I'm ready to return.
Yes, sir.
I see the constable on duty inside the house has all the gas lamps lit.
Every window's ablaze with light. Evidently, he's taking no chances of encountering your ghost in the dark. And where's the doorbell? Yeah, I found it.
I hope the man inside is all right.
You expect to find him otherwise?
We laughed at the stories about this house a few hours ago, Inspector. Now, after what has happened, oh, I couldn't stand being alone in there as he has been tonight.
I hardly think he's experienced anything to arouse his fears. You know, here he is. Good evening, Riley.
Good evening, Inspector. And it's glad I am to see you, sir.
You're white as a sheet, man. What's wrong?
Oh, nothing, sir, except this house is the devil. It's full of queer whispers, like. And it's glad I am to be alone inside it no longer.
Don't act a fool. Step inside, you people.
No.
Come, dear. Don't be afraid.
All right.
Close that door, Riley.
Yes, sir.
Now, which way is that laboratory?
Oh, please, don't make us go there,
Inspector,
now.
Inspector, my wife has been through a terrible experience today. If you'll allow her a little time...
Oh, very well. Yeah, sit down and compose yourself, Mrs. Sheridan. I'll get you a chair. Excuse me if I seem brusque and impatient, but all this talk of impossible ghosts makes me sick. What?
That chair!
Why, something seized it from my hand.
Carry it there, sir, to the wall and set it down.
Something did as if we couldn't see.
By the Lord, I soon will see.
Oh, that loss!
Is that what you heard this afternoon?
Yes. When we discovered Pike's dead body.
There it is again! It seems to be upstairs.
Come on, we're going to locate it.
No, wait. It means death to find it. Don't go there.
Come on, Eve. After them. It's better to be with them than down here alone.
Don't let them leave us alone.
Come on, quick, up these stairs.
Do you see anything, Riley?
Nothing, sir.
There it is again.
Now it seems to come from downstairs.
Whoever's well, responsible for it must have gone down the back way where we come up the front. Riley, go the back the way we came and see if you can head him off.
Yes.
I'll stay here in case he attempts to return.
Yes.
We have him on the run. We'll get him now. He's down there, Riley. Get him or drive him back up here to me.
Well, you don't know what you're doing. Leave this house.
Yes, that's not human laughter. It's the laughter of the dead.
It's the laughter of a maniac, a tricky, murderous madman who'll soon be in jail.
Oh, it's down there with that man.
You see him, Riley?
Sure, sir. But this time it sounded right beside you.
Riley!
The thing is killing him.
It's a kill fight.
Riley, hold on. We're coming, man.
Quickie, the down these stairs.
Riley!
There he is.
Riley!
He's lying crumpled on the floor.
But who could have struck him down? The room is empty.
Thank God he isn't dead.
Edith, darling, you must pull yourself together.
Quiet, Mrs. Sheridan, please. I want to hear what happened. Are you able to talk now, Riley?
Yes, sir. I'm all right now, but I don't know what happened. Except that something grabbed me from behind. I just had his fingers close around my throat and throw me to the floor. Then all went black. Oh, sir, this lady and gentleman is right. There's something in this house that we can't fight.
I'm not ready to believe that yet.
You must believe it and leave this house for the sake of all our lives.
I'll handle this. Riley, where were you seized? There where you fell?
Yes, sir. Just in front of this little door.
That door is to the laboratory where Mr. Fife was killed this afternoon.
I'm going to investigate that room right now.
No, don't go in there.
I'm going to find that strangler. He seems to prefer the vicinity of this laboratory. I want you to show me where the laughter seemed to come from when you discovered Fife's dead body.
Oh, no, not now. At least wait for daylight.
Yes, I call for more men to go in with us.
No. If he's sitting there, that'll give him a chance to get away. Come on, we're going in.
Go away, sir. There's no lights inside that room.
We'll use our flashlights, then.
Yes, sir.
This door sticks. I've got it. Keep your pistol handy, Riley.
Yes, sir.
Come on, you two.
We're coming.
It's so cold in here. Colder than it was this afternoon.
And it's an unnatural chill, ma'am. I feel it, too.
Nonsense. There's nothing unnatural about this whole business. A human being killed Fife. A human being attacked Riley. A human being laughs and disappears.
What was it took that chair from your hand when we came in?
Yes, what was that?
I'd forgotten that. But that chair will be explained like all the other tricks when I know the secret of that laugh. And I think the clue to that is in this room.
Oh!
Edith, look, they're bookshelves.
Well, they're opening outward like a door.
I leaned against them. I must have touched a hidden spring.
These shelves conceal a secret passage.
That's where the laughter came from. That's the strangler's hiding place. Ha! I knew we'd find the natural agency behind
all
this.
Wait a minute. There isn't a passage behind these shelves.
No, it's just a shallow recess.
Not large enough to hide a man.
And what space there is filled with tattered notebooks.
They won't help us any.
Look, above our heads.
A hand!
Without an arm or body.
My God, I'll know the secret of this trick.
Don't shoot, sir!
What harm could a bullet do to a disembodied hand?
It's floating downward through the air.
It's come to rest on one of those old notebooks.
One that lies there open.
Its finger is pointing at something on that page.
Now it's disappeared. Vanished before our eyes.
It was a woman's hand.
No, it was a hand of the dead. But I didn't fear it somehow. I felt it meant to help us. Arnold, take up that book. It rested on.
I have it.
What is it?
Hold this light so I can see. Mr. Drummond's name is written on it.
That was the old doctor.
It was the bridegroom's name who left the curse upon his house.
It's his diary. Something is tugging at it, trying to take it from my hand.
Hold tight.
I'll help you, sir.
Read that passage to which the finger is pointed.
Yes, help me hold the book.
Something's tugging at it like 10,000 devils.
Oh, be quick, read.
It says, "Today my labors were completed. I have found the thing I sought. Now I know that, living or dead,
My vengeance will be satisfied.
Vengeance?
Inspector, help us. Together we can hardly hold this book.
I said fingers. We can't see. They're trying to take it from us.
Quick, read on.
Here's the rest. I have at last discovered how to harness the tremendous force of human will.
Human will?
Help us. Hold on.
Read it all.
I shall leave my hate behind to live within these walls forever.
Oh, oh, the hands, let go of the book and knock my flashlight to the floor.
Oh, they've got mine, too.
Oh, we're in the dark.
Come on, quick, out this door.
Slam shut.
And I can't open it. Great. Help me, Riley. Together, our shoulders.
The lock.
It's with us in this room.
Come on, there. Two gleaming eyes.
Lights, they're shining darkly.
Your pistol, Riley. Fire at them. Fire.
Oh, are you? No use your shooting. Bullets can't harm the devil or ghost from out the grave.
Edith! Edith, where are you? Edith, I can't see you in this darkness.
I found her. She's here.
Oh, Arnold,
Edith.
I felt its fingers on me.
Sergeant, it's got me now. Icy fingers. At my throat.
Light a match. For God's sake, light.
Break open that door. It's our only chance to help him and ourselves.
Yes, Riley,
I'm with you. I'm with you.
Edith, darling, don't leave my side again.
No.
We've got it.
Oh, no. Blessed light.
The inspector. Where is he?
On the floor.
His head is bent sideways.
Neck is broken. He's dead.
The unseen thing is laughing. It means to kill us all.
Run for your lives.
Yes, I want to help.
Run, run, run.
You, sir, but if it were broad daylight, you'd never have gotten me here in this ghastly laboratory after the escape we had last night.
One of us didn't escape. Oh, Arnold, I'm afraid even in the sunlight.
Because Inspector Chase and so many others have met death here, we had to come back, Edith. And with a few more blows of these picks, Riley, I hope to end the dangers of Bridegroom's House forever.
You think that ghostly hand pointed the way?
Yes. I believe it was the hand of the woman who brought about Victor Drummond's mad desire for vengeance, of which that journal told. I believe last night that the dead spoke wordlessly to us.
Oh, Mr. Sheridan, my pick is broken through the wall.
Oh, yes, your guess was right. Arnold, there is another cubby hole behind that recess where we found the notebook.
Yes, and then that cubby hole is the thing that we must find. And
something's trying to keep us from finding, sir. Even in this blessed sunlight, I feel icy fingers at my throat.
Yes, I feel them, too. But in the day, they have no strength.
Aye, evil things have only power in darkness.
Come on, quick, make this opening larger. There's the thing we want.
You mean that little crystal globe?
I think that's it. Look, it's engraved with cabalistic symbols of the alchemist and wizard. And we know that Dr. Drummond was a student of black magic.
Black magic?
Yes. Then that globe, I think, has harnessed the human will of which his journal spoke. His will for vengeance. It still lives, although his body has been dust 100 years.
It's not possible.
So one who had never heard a radio or seen an aeroplane might say of them, nothing is impossible.
Lights gleam within the globe. Lights of hell, like them eyes we saw here last night.
Soon they'll gleam no more.
Smash it with your pick.
Help me, Riley. The icy hands are holding me, fighting to retain their power to hate and kill.
I'm with you, sir. Together we'll throw them off. Now with our forearms, bring down the pick.
In the center of that globe, now.
Ah, we've done it.
It's gone. Shattered. Not even dust is left.
The icy hand no longer holds.
They too are gone. Destroyed forever, like the mad will they obeyed.
But the unseen strangler will laugh no more.
No. The house of the bridegroom is no longer a place. A curse.
Well, that's the end of that, Satan. We'll have another Percy yarn to tell you soon.
The Witch's Tale, on Tuned to Yesterday, a syndicated broadcast from the 26th of June, 1933, on the air at a time where comedian Eddie Cantor was pulling 46% of the population of the U.S. to their radios every week, 58 million listeners, to his Sunday night program on NBC. This is an hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm Mark LeVonier. Now time for The Mysterious Traveler, with the tale The Visiting Corpse, heard on the Mutual Broadcasting System on August 17, 1948.
The Mutual Broadcasting System presents The Mysterious Traveler, written, produced, and directed by Robert A. Arthur and David Kogan, and starring tonight two of radio's foremost personalities, Adelaide Klein and Mason Adams, in an original radio drama titled The Visiting Corpse.
This is the Mysterious Traveler, inviting you to join me on another journey into the realm of the strange and the terrifying. I hope you will enjoy the trip, that it will thrill you a little and chill you a little. So settle back, get a good grip on your nerves, and be comfortable, if you can, as we meet the Visiting Corpse. Our story begins late one night in the modest suburban home of Albert Jordan. Albert, a mild-looking man in his early 30s, is tossing restlessly in his sleep. Now and then he moans and speaks as if having a nightmare.
No. No, leave me alone. I don't want to hear any more. Leave me alone.
That's going to put over my eyes, Albert Jordan. I'm under your way.
You
think my only child was foolish enough to elope with you. Poor Louise. There were so many men eager to marry her, and she had to be tricked into marriage by you.
Leave me alone. Leave me alone.
Darling, wake up.
What is it?
You were having a nightmare, dear. You don't want to wake Mother up. She needs a good night's sleep for a trip home tomorrow.
Yes, the trip. We mustn't let her miss a train. We mustn't, dear.
Oh, but whatever in the world is wrong with you?
Nothing. Only I wish it were already tomorrow and she were gone.
You sure you have everything, Mother?
Yes, Louise, dear. Everything I need for my trip home is in this handbag. Now, don't forget to ship my trunk.
Now, the express man will be here to pick it up this morning, Mother.
Thank you, darling.
It's almost 9 o'clock, Mother. You'll miss your train.
I have never missed a train in my life. You needn't be so anxious to get rid of me, Albert. Oh, Louise, darling, I do hate leaving you alone like this.
Really, Mother, I'll be all right.
Very well, then. If you say so, I'll go. But I'll be writing to you every day. And if he abuses you, just let me know. Goodbye, darling.
Goodbye, Mother, and take care of yourself.
And don't forget Louise. Mother will come back if you need her.
Yes, Mother. Goodbye.
Louise, if your mother pays us just one more visit, I'll leave this house and I'll never come back.
But, darling, it's only natural that Mother should want to visit me. I'm the only one she has in the world.
Yes, but she doesn't just visit us. She lives with us. In the past year, she spent 8 months with us. She has her clothes here, a key to the house. Well, she's even listed in the phone book under our numbers.
Please, Albert, she's gone now. Let's not quarrel.
Yes, she's gone now. But in 2 or 3 weeks, you can be sure she'll come back to spend a few months with us. I'm warning you, Louise. I won't be responsible for what happens if she keeps coming back.
Now, let me see. Send off the trunk. Well, that's one job I can enjoy doing. Mrs. Heather Roden, 125 River Road, Ferndale, Pennsylvania.
Oh, that won't be necessary, Albert.
What?
My trunk can remain here.
Mother, but you want to catch your train.
I've changed my mind about going. I won't leave my little girl alone. I'm sure she needs me. Where is Louise?
She went downtown.
Oh.
So you've come back again.
You've always wanted to get rid of me, haven't you, Albert? To keep me away from my only child. But I refuse to give her up. I've come back and I'm staying for good.
You're what?
Yes, and then I'll be sure that Louise is being well treated. Frankly, I don't trust you.
You don't trust me?
No. Why, I don't even know your background. You were a complete stranger when you forced poor Louise to elope with you a year ago. And for all I know, you may have criminal tendencies.
A certain amount of the criminal in all of us. Most people can control their worst instincts. But some can't.
Exactly. And I'm here to see to it that no one harms Louise.
But who's going to look out for you, Mother?
Albert, why are you looking at me so queerly? Are you sick?
Yes, Mother, I'm sick. Sick of the sight of you.
No, Albert, you must control yourself. I want you to go to your room at once and lie down.
No, you had to keep coming back, Mother, and keep giving me orders.
Albert, stop looking at me that way. But you seem like another person.
I am, Mother. You wouldn't let what was decent in me live, and now you must take the consequences.
Albert, stay away from me. Don't
you dare come near me?
You would keep coming back, Mother, when you came back just once too
no,
often.
No, Albert, don't take me. Albert, don't.
You should have taken that train, Mother. But at least now I know you won't be coming back. You won't come back ever again. You won't. You won't. I didn't want to kill you, but you made me. I've got to get rid of her. They'll catch me. The trunk. Yes, it's large enough. But she needs it. Here in her handbag. Even in death, you're a problem, Mother, but you won't be for long. There. Now I'll just pack this clothing around you tightly. That got it. Now I'll have to get rid of the trunk.
Albert, are you home?
Louise, the trunk, I've got to get it closed.
That you, Albert?
Yes, dear.
Oh, I see you're locking the trunk.
Yes, I was getting it ready for the express man.
It should be here now. Albert, is anything wrong?
What? What do you mean, Louise?
I don't know. Your face is so flushed.
It's, just a little warm in here, that's all.
Look, we forgot to pack Mother's robe. I know she'll want it. I'm afraid you'll have to open the trunk again, Albert.
No. I mean, the trunk is full already. We couldn't get anything else in it.
Nonsense. When Mother and I packed, it was only half full. Please open it.
But it's locked, and your mother has the key.
Yes, you're right. Well, we just have to mail the robe to her. I'll answer the door. It must be the expressman. Make sure the tags are on it, dear.
Tags? I can't go to her home. If only I had time to think. Wait. Yes, that's the only thing to do. I'll make out new tags.
The expressman's backing his truck up the door, Albert. Have you got the tags already?
I'm just finishing them. Yeah. All right, dear.
Well, let me see if you have the address right. Sometimes you're so forgetful.
Now, Louise, you needn't bother. Of course the tags are made out right now. Stand aside. I'll carry the trunk to the door.
Well, let the expressman do it, Albert. That's what he's being paid for. And I really do want to check the address on the tag.
Now, Louise.
Oh, please, Albert. I'm just playing safe. What? These tags are addressed to Mrs. William Smith, 345 Wood Street, Las Vegas.
They are?
They certainly are. What were you thinking of?
I don't know, Louise, but I'll change them. You just go on and let me tend to it.
Indeed I will not. You let the expressman in and I'll tend to the tag. If I left it to you, Mother's trunk would probably go heaven knows where and never be found again. Albert, I'm really worried.
Worried, Louise?
So weak now and no word from Mother. She said she'd write every day.
Nah, dear, maybe she's been too busy to write.
She's busy? You know Mother doesn't do anything. No, there's something wrong, I feel
but
it.
Now, you mustn't worry, Louise. I'm sure that she's all right. Oh, I'll answer.
I'll come with you. Maybe it's a special delivery letter for Mother.
Well, Marlene, I got a trunk for you, folks.
I spot his trunk.
Why, is it?
You've always wanted to get rid of me, Albert. To keep me away from my only child. But I refuse to give her up. I've come back, Albert, and I'm staying for good.
No.
What'd you say, Albert?
Say? Nothing.
That lady, the trunk.
Oh, bring it in, won't you, please?
Okay. There you are.
I don't understand. Why should Mother send her trunk back to us?
Would you mind signing for Mr. Jordan?
Yes, all right. Here you are.
Thanks. Bye.
Albert, I can't understand why Mother shipped her trunk back to us, and without even writing a word about it. Well, I'm going to put an end to this guessing.
What are you going to do?
I'm calling Mother. Hello, operator? I want to put through a call to Ferndale, Pennsylvania. The number's 223. Yes, that's right. My number's Riverdale 7745. Thank you.
Why bother phoning, Louise? I'm sure there's a letter on the way.
I've waited long enough for one. Albert, why do you keep staring at the trunk so?
What? Oh, was I?
What's wrong with you, Albert? This past week you've been so jumpy. Oh, hello? Hello, Sarah. This is Louise calling. How are you? Oh, I'm fine, thank you. Is my mother there? What? Are you sure? So that's why you shipped the trunk back? No, thank you, Sarah. Albert, Sarah says that Mother never arrived home. She hasn't been there this past week.
Was Sarah the one who shipped the trunk back?
Yes. She thought Mother decided to stay with us longer and need her clothes. Oh, but where can she be?
Oh, Louise, I'm sure that she's all right.
All right. She's been missing a week. How could she be? I'm going to call the police. Oh, Albert, where can she be? 24 hours have gone by and the police still haven't found her.
Oh, no, dear, it takes time. You must have patience. They're doing everything they can.
Suppose she's dead.
You mustn't talk like that. Nothing is known yet. Why do you keep staring at the trunk?
I don't know.
Darling, it just upsets you to see the trunk. It keeps reminding you of your mother. I'd better put it in storage.
All right, Albert. Do as you please.
Now you're being sensible, dear. I'll take good care of Mother's trunk.
That very afternoon, Albert took the trunk to the express office. He shipped it away again, this time to a non-existent address in California. He also gave a false return address, so he was quite sure it would never come back to bother him again.
Look, darling, I brought you some flowers. Here's a little present.
Thank you, Albert. Very nice.
Louise, your mother has been missing 5 weeks. Now, you can't go on this way. You'll have a nervous breakdown.
Albert, where can she be? Why can't the police find her?
Darling, if she hasn't been found in 5 weeks, I'm afraid there's no hope. Louise, you must resign yourself to her loss. Oh, I'll answer it, dear. You just sit here and rest.
All right, Albert.
Yes?
Good evening. I got something here which I believe belongs to you.
Belongs to me?
Yes. A trunk.
A trunk?
Yes. Ever since it came into the depot a couple of days ago, I've been trying to locate the owner, and I've been having quite a time of it. Did a little checking and figured out it might be yours.
You've always wanted to get rid of me, Albert, to keep me away from my only child, but I refuse to give her up. I've come back, Albert.
Do you recognize it?
No. Don't you know where the trunk goes?
Well, no. It's come all the way back from California. Seems there wasn't any such address where this was shipped to.
Surely it had a return address.
Yeah, but the rain kind of washed it off. Until all you can make out now is Riverdale, New York.
What makes you think it belongs here?
Well, I sort of did a little detective work. The initials stamped on the trunk are HLR, and I looked it up in the phone book, and the only person in Riverdale with those initials lives here.
I'm sorry, but you must have the wrong place. Where will you take the trunk now?
Oh, it'll be put with unclaimed luggage. Then in a few months, it'll be sold for charges, unopened.
Sold for charges?
Yeah. And you'd be surprised what you sometimes find in unclaimed trunks. Sort of like a grab bag game. Well, I'm sorry to have troubled
you. Wait a minute. What did you say those initials were?
H-L-R.
H-L-R? Mm-hmm. Why, they're my mother-in-law's initials. How stupid of me, of course.
But, well, you just said it wasn't your trunk.
Well, it isn't. It's hers. Her name is Heather L. Roden.
Yeah, that was the only name in the phone book with those initials. That's why I come here.
Well, it was an extremely clever piece of detective work. I suppose there's a collect charge on the trunk.
Yep. Comes to $31.50 with the trucking. Well, I'll just put the trunk inside for you.
Thank you. Well, we'd have hated to lose the trunk. Here's $35. Keep the change.
Oh, great. Thanks. Good night.
Good night. So you've come back again, as you said you would. Well, you haven't beaten me yet.
Albert, who was it? Why, the trunk. I thought it was in storage.
Well, it was, dear, but they're closing the storage house. They brought it back.
Oh, I see. Looks rather worn now, doesn't it? Albert, how do we know there isn't a letter or something in the trunk that'll give us a clue to Mother's disappearance?
Now, Louise, you know that's ridiculous. There's nothing in that trunk but clothes.
Oh, you're probably right, Albert, but just the same, I'm going to open it.
But you haven't got the key to it.
No, but I have half a dozen old keys on this ring. Possibly, just possibly, one of them might open the trunk.
Well, here, let me have the keys. I'll see if I can open it for you.
Oh, thank you, dear. Here you are.
Just a waste of time, but if it'll make you feel better. This one doesn't work. Nor does this one.
Why, Albert, you're not even really trying. Here, let me...
I tell you, it's no use.
Well, let me try for myself. Oh, no, this key doesn't fit.
I told you so. Now, why don't you give up?
This one doesn't either.
You're only wasting your time.
No, this one isn't any good. Perhaps this one will do it. None of these keys will open it. But in the morning, I'm going to get a locksmith to open it. I've got to see what's in that trunk. Perhaps it'll lead to our finding Mother.
So she's going to get a locksmith in the morning, is she? Well, you won't be here when he comes. I'll see to that.
You've always wanted to get rid of me, Albert, to keep me away from my only child. But I refuse to give her up. I've come back, Albert, and I'm staying for good.
You're not, do you hear? You're not. You'll never come back after tonight. Never. Pardon me, miss, but you store trunks here, don't you?
Why, yes, sir. This is the largest storage house in New York. Do you wish to store that trunk you just brought in?
Yes, please.
May I have your name?
Williams. John Williams.
And the address?
313 Maple Street.
Mm-hmm. What city, please?
Baltimore, Maryland.
Okay. Now, the charge for the trunk will be $4 a month. How many months do you want to store it?
How many months? Let me see how much money I have. I'm only $8 with me.
Well, that'll pay for 2 months, then. If you want to keep it here longer, you can mail us your check.
Yes, I'll do that.
Okay. Here's your receipt, Mr. Williams.
Thank you. Good night.
And so Albert got rid of the embarrassing trunk at last. So there was only one little hitch. Before he could send any more money, he lost the storage receipt and he forgot the false name he'd given the storage people. So he couldn't pay for additional storage. But he knew they'd keep it at least a year. He was quite sure that it could never be traced back to him. So after a few months, he stopped worrying.
Good evening, dear. How are you?
I'm all right, Al.
Fine. Say, I bumped into George Horton and his wife on the way home, and they asked us to come to a charity auction that's being held tonight.
That was very nice of him, Albert.
Why don't we go, dear? Do you a lot of good. You haven't been anywhere for 6 months now.
I know, Albert, and I've been unfair to you, haven't I? You haven't seen anyone in 6 months yourself. All right, if you like, I'll go to the charity auction tonight.
Gentlemen, none of my bid for this beautiful antique lamp. Do I have $5? Oh, come, ladies and gentlemen. Look closely at this work of art. Now, do I hear $5?
I bid $5.
Now, then we have a lady with a real sense of beauty. Now, do I hear $6?
Good evening, George.
Hello, Albert. I'm glad that Louise and you came. How are you, Louise?
Quite well, thank you. It was nice of you to invite us here, John.
Well, we've missed both of you quite a bit these past months.
Well, I hope you'll be seeing more of it.
You know, you've got quite a crowd here tonight.
Yes,
we hope to raise a good deal of money. You know, that auctioneer is a genius. He can sell the most useless object to make it seem valuable.
Well, we'll have to get in on the bidding.
Say, wait till you see the next item he puts up for sale. It's something I donated, and it's going to be quite a surprise.
You are always good at that, George.
Come on, let's move a little closer to the auctioneer.
Do I hear 12? Do I hear 12? All right, I've got $11. Well, you're going to let this remarkable lamp go for as little as $11. All right, it's your last chance, ladies and gentlemen. Going at $11 once. Going twice. Sold to the gentleman in the tweed suit. And very fortunate he is.
That lamp couldn't have cost more than $3 when it was new. Oh, now, here comes something for sale that I donated.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. The next item for sale is something so good that I'm tempted to enter in the bidding myself. Ladies and gentlemen, my assistant will remove that cover. And there you have the next bargain. A locked trunk. All right, ladies and gentlemen, study it well. Study it well, ladies and gentlemen. I'll give you a few minutes. Then we'll start the bidding.
The trunk. No.
No, it can't be. Yet it's the same size. It's the same color. The initials. The initials, that'll prove, but... No. No, they seem to have been rubbed off.
You've always wanted to get rid of me, Albert. To keep me away from my only child. But I refuse to give her up. I've come back, Albert, and I'm staying for good.
You are back. When I didn't send them any more money, they sold the trunk for charges.
Yes, I've come back, Albert, and I'm staying for good.
All right, here we are. Now, this is no ordinary trunk, ladies and gentlemen. It was donated to this auction by Mr. George Horton, who bought it at a storage house. He never broke the lock to examine the contents, preferring to save that wonderful surprise for the person who purchases this remarkable trunk tonight. All right, who knows what it contains? Perhaps the crown jewels of Russia. Or, better still, 5 quarts of scotch. All right. Now, who'll start the bidding for this mystery trunk?
I'll bid $20.
$20? Why, madam, this trunk, the trunk alone is worth 40. Who knows what's in it?
I've come back, Albert, and I'm staying for good.
No.
Albert, you look so pale. Is there anything wrong?
Oh, no. Everything's all right.
Oh, come, ladies and gentlemen. The contents of this trunk may be priceless. Do I hear a bid of $30?
I'm afraid I'm just as curious as everyone else to know what's in that trunk. I'll bid $30.
We have a bid of $30 from Mr. Horton, the German who donated this mystery trunk. All right, do I hear $40?
Albert, that trunk looks something like Mother's, doesn't it?
So you noticed.
Surely I hear $40. Why, any dealer would pay $40 for the trunk alone. That means you'd have the contents for free. Come on, ladies and gentlemen. Do I hear $40?
$40?
There's a lady with a shrewd eye for a bargain. All right. Full bid, $50. I'll say $50.
But, Albert, we don't need a trunk.
Oh, let him have fun, Louise. After all, it is for charity. Besides, you can never tell what's in the trunk.
I wish I could bid on this myself, ladies and gentlemen. I now have a bid of $50. Which I am convinced is only one-tenth the true value of this trunk. All right. Do I hear $60?
$60.
$70.
That's more like it. Now, do I hear $80?
$80.
$100.
Ah, you people are beginning to show a real appreciation for this trunk. We'll make it $110.
$110.
$120.
Do I hear
$130.
$130.
$150. Oh, fun, Albert, but you're going too high.
Leave me alone.
Albert, what's wrong with you?
The gentleman has bid $150. Do I hear any more? Going once, at 150. Going twice, at 150. Sold to that gentleman for
$150. I never saw anyone go after anything the way you went after that trunk, Albert. Well, I'm afraid nothing will satisfy the crowd now but for you to open up the trunk and... reveal what's in it.
No, I'm sorry, but I don't intend to open until I get home. No.
Come on, Albert. Now, don't spoil the fun. It won't hurt to open it.
I told you I wouldn't do it. No, I'm sorry, George, but... Well, I haven't a key to open it, and there's no sense in breaking the lock after paying $150 for the trunk.
Well, maybe I can help you, Mr. Horton. That's some skeleton keys that'll open any lock. Here,
I'll show you. We auctioneers always running into locked trunks.
Oh, we'll certainly appreciate it.
Yeah. I think this key'll do it.
Stop! You have no right to touch my trunk. I paid for it, and I don't want it open. Then get away from it. It's mine.
Albert, what's wrong with you?
Well, all right, certainly. If that's the way you feel about it.
Come on, Louise. We're going home.
Albert, you're acting so strangely. Why do you insist on dragging that trunk away now?
Stop talking and come along.
Well, all right, Albert.
Albert, that trunk is pretty heavy. Don't you want me to give you a hand with it?
I can manage it alone, thank you. Open that door for me, Louise.
Albert, don't you think you'd better let George help you get the trunk down those stairs?
No, I'm not going to let anyone touch this trunk.
You've always wanted to get rid of me, Albert, to keep me away from my only child. But I refuse to give her up. I've come back, Albert, and I'm staying for good.
Albert, do be careful on those stairs.
I've come back, Albert, and I'm staying for good.
Be quiet, you old hag. Be quiet. You haven't defeated me yet. I'll get rid of you if it's the last thing I...
automaton. He lost his balance on the stairs. The trunk was too heavy for him.
Oh, Albert, speak to me. Albert! George, do something.
I'm sorry, Louise. I'm afraid he's gone. Trunk crushed his skull.
Now, look, Mr. Horton. Hmm? The fall broke the trunk open. There was nothing in it but a load of books.
Again. Did you enjoy our trip? Too bad about poor Albert. Then there are always some mother-in-laws you simply can't get away from.
They keep coming back
like an old refrain. Oh, well, Albert's now a free man. Unless, of course, he's been haunted on the other side.
Now, I recall another case in which a young man who woke up to find himself dead decided that
You have to get off here. I'm sorry. But I'm sure we'll meet again. I take this same train every week at the same time.
The Mysterious Traveler, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 17th of August, 1948, on the Mutual Broadcasting System. And so closes this hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us again for more great programs from radio's golden era. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. Thanks for listening.